It's Thursday, October 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, Russia conducts airstrikes in Syria. Islamic State apparently is not targeted. The International Monetary Fund assesses the global economy.
It's going to take a lot of effort on both sides in many ways, of monitoring, of reaching out to the people who might actually be committing such acts.
Cyber spying remains a thorny keyword between the United States and China. Also ahead, you can now grow your own furniture, and a young star moves from movies to music. It's all on today's International Edition. The United States said it would continue to lead coalition airstrikes against Islamic State's targets in Syria, ignoring Russia's request for U.S. aircraft to avoid Syrian airspace as Russia began conducting bombing attacks there Wednesday in support of the Syrian government. U.S. State Department spokesman John Kirby said a Russian official in Baghdad had given the U.S. Embassy personnel short notice earlier in the morning of the planned strikes in Syria against Islamic State targets. Kirby said the U.S.-led coalition will continue to fly missions over Iraq and Syria as planned and in support of international mission to degrade and destroy ISIL, of course an acronym for the Islamic State group. An unnamed Pentagon source said the coalition struck at the northern city of Aleppo Wednesday. U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter earlier had directed the Pentagon staff to communicate with Russia about coalition activity in Syria to avoid any mistaken encounter between coalition and Russian forces there, according to a Pentagon spokesman. Meanwhile, the Pentagon and Western officials question whether the Russian airstrikes spotted near the western city of Homs are aimed at the Islamic State group. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb spoke with International Edition host Susan Yockey about the speed with which the Russians have deployed.
This is a surprise. Well, according to a U.S. official that just spoke with me minutes ago, a Russian general approached a U.S. official at the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad, and that general said that Russia would begin anti-Islamic State airstrikes in Syria today. He asked the U.S. official to have U.S. members remain clear of Syrian airspace, to remove any ground troops. Of course, the United States does not have any ground troops in Syria. And the U.S. official took that and reported it back. And then we've since heard from a spokesperson from the State Department that the U.S. says that they are going to continue to fly their missions over Iraq and Syria. And as we've seen with the U.S. Conducting an airstrike in Aleppo today, that is what they've continued to do.
Well, Carla, do you have any confirmation from the U.S. government that the Russians are actually bombing ISIL positions and not anti-Assad positions?
No, quite the contrary. I just heard from a U.S. official that said that they're striking in Homs. The targets are unknown, but it is fair to say, according to the official, that the target is not the Islamic State. The Islamic State is focused in the areas of Raqqa, Deir ez-Zor, Aleppo. Homs is not a place where the Islamic State is. However, Homs is a place where a lot of anti-Assad supporters and anti-Assad fighters are. So the United States and this official did tell me that they do not have any confirmation of what the target is, but they are very sure by deduction, that was another direct quote from him, that the strikes are not anti-Islamic State.
Well, what official statements have you gotten in the past about Russian military involvement in Syria?
Well, this has all come about very quickly. The presidents of Russia and the United States just met on Monday. Secretary Carter then went to his staff and said that Russia conversations would begin to avoid any sort of deconfliction. Deconfliction is just you don't want people to be in the same airspace. You don't want an accident to happen because any miscalculation between two nuclear superpowers could be catastrophic. So that was supposed to begin, and then we heard this morning. So I think the United States is kind of taken by surprise on how quickly Russia has been moving.
VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. It's time for us to check out online reactions to what's happening in Syria. International Edition's social media correspondent G. Abby Lee is with me in Studio 22 to bring us the latest. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
It seems like there are some differing views on the situation between Washington and the Kremlin. Is that also reflected on Twitter?
Definitely. Like Carla said earlier, it's clear the U.S. government is taken aback by Russia's military action in Syria. or their target in Syria, to be more specific. So in some ways, what Russia appears to be doing right now is exactly the opposite of what Washington wanted it to do. So without further ado, let's take a look at both American and Russian Twitter accounts. And which one should we start with?
Well, let's go with Russia, since its military is the one conducting the airstrikes.
Sure. RT is Russia's state-run television station, and it's on Twitter at RT_COM. It tweeted this earlier today. Hashtag Syria, Russia strikes 8 ISIS targets after reconnaissance mission makes 20 flights. About 190 people shared that tweet so far.
So the Russian state media outlet is adamant that they are targeting the terrorist group. What's Washington's stance?
Well, Secretary of State John Kerry didn't shy away from tweeting about how he feels about it, but he didn't say whether Russia's military actions are indeed targeted toward forces opposing the Assad government. He's usually not that prolific on Twitter, but he sent out 4 tweets regarding this today. So the first tweet reads like this. The U.S. supports any genuine effort to fight ISIL. However, we'll not be confused in our fight against ISIL with support for ISIL. For Assad, excuse me. So that's, of course, referring to the Syrian president, Bashar al-Assad. And in later tweets, he wrote, Washington would have grave concerns should Russia strike areas where ISIL-affiliated targets are not operating. Jim?
Well, whether it's IS, ISIL, ISIS, they all refer to the Islamic State. But there is only one handle our social media guru, G, goes by on Twitter. That, of course, at G. Abby Lee. And our VOA International Edition account is also on Twitter. Please follow us at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This is VOA's International Edition. The senior-most U.S. intelligence official has said that he remains skeptical a new U.S.-China cybersecurity agreement will slow the increasing and more sophisticated cyber attacks on U.S. public and private computer networks. The Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, stopped short of accusing Beijing of being behind all such attacks emanating from China as he addressed members of the Senate Armed Services Committee Tuesday. Clapper did suggest economic sanctions may be the best way to force China to curb cyber attacks. University of Chicago China expert Dali Yang told VOA's Victor Beatty that this issue is complicated and the Chinese government will have a challenge to rein in rogue hackers in the country.
Well, my sense with those kind of issues, and given the bitter acrimony before the negotiations, before the agreement or understanding rather than a formal agreement in many ways, is that actually it's going to take a lot of effort on both sides in many ways of monitoring, of reaching out to the people who might actually be committing such acts. And in the Chinese case also, I think everyone recognizes that there are many players in China. This is a vast country, many people, some are affiliated with state units. There are a lot of young people as well who are very interested in doing things as well. So my sense is it requires a lot of monitoring and also education on the part of the Chinese. So I would be looking for some indicators of what the Chinese government is doing. Are they going to be issuing some sort of guidelines or documents to people working in the software industry, for example, or who are writing codes to tell them that, yeah, there are certain actions that are simply not acceptable and so on. And, of course, there would need to be continuing dialogue and review of the situation over time. So in that sense, actually, a little bit of skepticism actually is warranted, whether it's technology or trade or many other issues.
I guess from your comment, that would imply that the Chinese government, in your view, is not responsible for all of these attacks.
Yeah, I think, just like in our country, in the United States, we also from time to time have wayward actions by individuals as well. So in that sense, actually, a government cannot be fully responsible for everything. But that doesn't mean that the Chinese government doesn't have any accountability, because, of course, governments can do a lot more, including, for example, finding out who are the perpetrators and, of course, punishing those who do.
Mr. Clapper, in his testimony before the Senate on Tuesday, as well as other top U.S. military officials, said cyber threats are increasing in frequency, scale, sophistication, and severity, and the U.S. needed the same kind of deterrent capability in cyberspace that it maintains for nuclear weapons. Obviously, this is a serious problem that incorporates not just attacks from China, but other countries.
Yeah, I think this is a global issue. We have our industry, and in fact, it's not a single sector. It's a sector, a technology that has become so indispensable to our everyday lives and, of course, to the functions, the businesses of gigantic corporations and governments. So software and, of course, operating systems are everywhere. So in that sense, it's extremely important that there are systems globally to deal with those kind of issues, to provide some order, while, however, continuing to encourage innovation of experimentation around the world.
Under the bilateral agreement announced last Friday during President Xi Jinping's state visit to Washington, President Obama said both countries affirm the principle that governments don't engage in cyber espionage for commercial gain against companies. Mr. Xi has called such cooperation mutually beneficial. The head of the International Monetary Fund is warning that global growth will be slowing next year. Alexis Christophorus joins us from VOA's New York Bureau with more.
Jim, during a speech in Washington, D.C., the IMF's managing director, Christine Lagarde, said a possible rise in U.S. interest rates, coupled with a slowdown in China, are contributing to uncertainty and higher market volatility in the global economy. Back in July, the IMF projected world growth at 3.3%. That would be down slightly from 2014. Now, the IMF expects only modest acceleration next year, but did not provide a specific forecast. A formal economic outlook is expected October 6th. Lagarde has previously urged the Federal Reserve to delay an interest rate hike until 2016. While emerging markets are generally better prepared for higher U.S. interest rates than in the past, Lagarde said rising borrowing costs and a stronger dollar could reveal what she calls currency mismatches, leading to corporate defaults. Jim?
Alexis, did Lagarde make any predictions about the economic outlook for emerging markets?
She did, and the head of the IMF said the growth potential of the world economy is being held back by low productivity, aging populations, and high debt. Now, Lagarde said emerging economies need to improve their monitoring of the foreign exchange exposure of major companies, while countries with room to raise public spending should try to boost growth by increasing investment. She predicts that Japan will return to growth and that the euro area recovery will gain momentum. However, she warned that expansion in emerging economies will likely decline for the fifth straight year. She said while India remains a bright spot, countries such as Russia and Brazil are facing what she calls serious economic difficulties. And she added that reforms in China to lift incomes will lead to slower, safer, and more sustainable growth. Jim?
Alexis is always a bright spot on our day. We appreciate having your financial insight. Alexis Christophorus from New York, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palkov.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA. A leader in news coverage for over 70 years. The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment.
Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Well, now for something a bit out of the ordinary to furnish your home, why not consider wooden chairs crafted by nature with a little help from some British botanists with an eye for design? VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
In a quiet grove in the eastern Midlands of England, Gavin Monroe tends his crabapple trees, a crop he's cultivating for an unusual product.
These are all from the chair back, and what we've got here is a branch ready to become a chair arm. We've got one on the other side. It's pretty simple, really.
One day it will resemble this. Gavin thinks this approach makes sense.
To make a chair nowadays, or the way we've been doing it, is almost ludicrous. We grow these trees for 60 years before they're worth cutting down, and then we make them into smaller and smaller bits, only to stick them back together again in ways that can only ever come loose over time. And why do all of that?
Gavin grew his first pieces from a type of willow he found easy to shape, perfecting his technique for nearly a decade to now include a variety of tree species.
You can't force the trees to do anything they don't want to do. You know, we learnt this early on. If you shape a branch in the wrong way, it doesn't like it, it's just going to die. A new shoot will grow lower down.
A lot of people have been saying for quite a long time, yes, that's a bit bonkers, he's a crazy bloke in a field, what is he doing? But actually, there's been a lot of really positive reactions, especially recently.
For Gavin and his wife, it's a labour of love, considering it can take 8 years to grow a chair and as long as 15 years to grow a dining room table.
It's something similar to setting up a vineyard. You know, it takes a few years to get going, but we'll have a crop every year.
The first major harvest is a year away. The Monroes think the results are worth the wait. Jessica Berman, VOA News.
And we invite you to check out the video on our website, voanews.com, to see the furniture yourself. Well, you may relax on your newly grown furniture listening to a young actress who is now moving into the music industry. With me in the studios, VOA music expert Ray McDonald. Ray, this career path hasn't happened much, has it?
Wow, how unique is that, huh? But Haley Steinfeld has already shown us that she knows how to sing. She's an 18-year-old actress-singer. She's from Los Angeles. And even if her singing and acting career goes kaput, which it probably won't, she still has a bright future in personal training because her father is a personal trainer, as is her uncle, Jake Steinfeld. And if you're a student of popular culture here in the U.S., you may remember about 20 years ago, Jake Steinfeld founded a personal fitness empire under the Body by Jake brand. Mm. And so Haley is her, his niece.
Yeah. When I get chills at night, I feel it deep inside. You, yeah, know how to satisfy, keeping the tempo right without you, yeah.
She began acting at a very young age. She was 8 years old. At 13, she played Maddie Ross in the remake of the Western True Grit. That earned her a nomination for Best Supporting Actress at the age of 13. Not bad. In 2013, she was in the sci-fi adventure Ender's Game. And earlier this year, Haley starred in Pitch Perfect 2. The Pitch Perfect franchise is turning into a big hit. Movie made a lot of money. She sang a Jessie J song, Flashlight. Mm-hmm. And Pitch Perfect 3 will be coming out in 2017, and Haley is also in that.
Yeah. Got me speaking in tongues, the beautiful it comes without you. Yeah.
Now, after Pitch Perfect 2 was a big hit, Republic Records came calling with a record contract. Haley is making her debut album, which she says she can't wait for us to hear because it's going to surprise a lot of people. And we already know about the first hit single. It's called Love Myself. It was released on August 7th, and it's currently rising in 30th place on the latest Billboard Hot 100 singles chart.
And that sounds so good, Ray. Haley, obviously, is going to have a bright future in front of her at the tender age of 18.
Well, she certainly knows what to do. I mean, she's been around showbiz figures all her life. I think she's pretty well prepared for what comes next.
Be sure to follow Ray on Twitter, Ray on the Hits, and also his countdowns right here on The Voice of America. Ray, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Jim.
Along with Haley Steinfeld, you've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at our website, voanews.com. We're also on Twitter. We invite you to follow us there as well. VOA _IE is the handle. We'd like to thank our engineer, Ida Nutku, and our director, Tracy Carter, and you for joining us. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Trade and Development Agency awarded a grant on September 25th to NextGen Solawazi Limited to support the development of a 60-megawatt solar photovoltaic power plant in Shinyanga, a city in northwestern Tanzania. The grant supports a feasibility study that will evaluate the technical and commercial viability of the power plant, conduct environmental and social impact assessments, and provide the necessary analysis for NextGen Solawazi to seek implementation financing. This project is critically important to Tanzania's economic growth as, according to the World Bank, only 15% of its population has access to electricity. USTDA is pleased to continue our work with NextGen Solawazi to develop renewable energy in Tanzania, said Director Leocadia Zak, who signed the grant agreement along with NextGen Solawazi Limited Managing Director Mayank Bargava. This project presents a valuable opportunity to draw upon U.S. technical expertise to deploy new energy generation capacity in Shinyanga. Tanzania's National Strategy for Poverty Reduction and Growth has identified limited power generation capacity and poor electricity access as the most critical issue for development, said Mr. Bargava. Energy generation from the solar plant will not only electrify an estimated 210,000 households, but also act as a catalyst to attract other commercial enterprises by providing reliable, plentiful, and cheaper electricity. The feasibility study will be undertaken by U.S. engineering and technical consulting company Clean Energy Consulting and Education in Phoenix, Arizona. The project builds upon the agency's previous collaboration with NextGen Solawazi, including the provision of an owner's engineer who is supporting efforts to build a 5-megawatt solar plant in Kigoma, Tanzania. Both of these projects advance the goals of Power Africa, a U.S. government-led initiative to add cleaner, more efficient electricity generation capacity across the subcontinent. The United States is proud to work with its partner, Tanzania, to help provide clean, safe, and renewable energy to meet the needs of a growing and vibrant population.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.